sit. So I want you to, I know y'all are taking notes. So get your pen and paper, get your electronic device, however you're putting stuff down. Pull it out, come on. I want you to put this down. Because this is the one thing that I want you to hang on to. Are y'all ready? If you want things in your life to change, you're going to have to change some things in your life. Okay, do we have it right here? There it is. If you want things in your life to change, you're going to have to change some things in your life. This statement, Holy Spirit downloaded to me, I don't know, sometime around September or October, and I have just been meditating on it and gnawing on it for quite some time now. And I think it goes hand in hand with what we talked about last week, because you, as you remember, if you were here, I told you that I felt like God was taking us into this new season, a season of all things teething, of cutting teeth, so that we can take in solid, deep, meaty spiritual food. And I believe that this sentence, this statement, is a launching pad into that season. That we're going to have to embrace this as we move into the new season. So this morning, I want to give you some stuff to gnaw on, because we're going to do a little teething this morning. Remember, I told you that going forward, our messages are going to be designed for cutting teeth. So let's go to John chapter 5, verses 1 through 15. The notes are in YouVersion. If you want to follow along there, of course, it'll be on the screen behind me. But I hope you brought your Bibles, because that's super important. So get your Bible out. Let's go to John chapter 5, verses 1 through 15. I'm going to be reading from the Amplified Version, which if you have never read that, it's a little wordy, which means there's additional words in there to produce clarity and insight as you're reading, maybe explain some stuff. So if I've got extra words, don't worry, that's why, but I really, really liked this particular translation. All right, you ready? John 5, 1 through 15. Later on, there was a Jewish feast or a festival, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now in Jerusalem, near the Sheep Gate, there is a pool, which is called in Hebrew, or the Jewish Aramaic, Bethesda, having five porticos, also alcoves or colonnades. And in these porticos lay a great number of people who were sick, blind, lame, withered, all waiting for the stirring of the water. For an angel of the Lord went down into the pool at appointed seasons and stirred up the water, and the first one to go in after the water had been stirred was healed of his disease. There was a certain man who had been ill for 38 years, and when Jesus noticed him lying there helpless, knowing that he had been in that condition for a long time, he said to him, "Do you want to get well?" And the invalid answered, "Sir, I have no one to put me in the pool when the water is stirred, and while I'm coming to get into it myself, someone else steps down ahead of me." And Jesus said to him, "Get up, pick up your pallet, and walk." And immediately the man was healed and recovered his strength and picked up his pallet and walked. Now, that day was the Sabbath, and so the Jews kept saying to the man who had been healed, "It is the Sabbath, and you're not permitted to pick up your pallet because it's unlawful." And he answered them, "The man who healed me and gave me back my strength was the one who said to me, 'Pick up your pallet and walk.' And now the man who had been healed did not know who it was, for Jesus had slipped away unnoticed since there was a crowd in that place. Afterward, Jesus found him in the temple and said to him, 'See, you are well. Stop sinning, or something worse may happen to you.' The man went away and told the Jews that it was Jesus who had made him well." Okay. So let's talk about this for a few minutes. Let's just kind of break this down. So Jesus is in Jerusalem, and he has gone to a place called Bethesda where there was a pooling of water. And it was said that an angel would come and stir the waters periodically. And if you could get into the water immediately after it was stirred, the very first person, then you would be completely healed from all of your infirmities. And so As Jesus is moving through Bethesda, he notices that there is a man that had been sick for 38 years. Now, the Bible doesn't tell us if he had been at Bethesda the entire time, but it does say that he had been there a long time. So whether it had been for the entire sickness or part of the sickness, we don't really know. And so Jesus approaches this man and starts a conversation by asking a question. Now, the first thing we need to know is that Jesus never asks a question because he doesn't know. Right? Jesus asks a question so that we'll gain insight, so that we will discover something that we didn't know. And so Jesus approaches a man who had been disabled for 38 years, who had been living by the pool of Bethesda, which is known for the place of crippled, lame, sick, blind, people with infirmities. That was the place for him to be. They'd been living there for 38 years. And he approaches this man and says, "Do you want to get well?" Now, you would think that the answer would be an obvious yes, absolutely. That's why I'm at Bethesda. Because it is at Bethesda, it has done it again. Bless the Lord, oh my soul. You know, I don't know that I'm going to ever use this again. This is 2 weeks in a row. Okay, so he approaches the man and asks him a question, "Do you want to get healed?" And you would think that the man's answer would be, "Absolutely, that's why I'm at Bethesda." Because that's where you come when you're sick, is to Bethesda, in hopes that you can get into the water. But that is not what he said. The man's answer is very revealing, showing us what is inside his heart, showing us what's going on in his thoughts. Because his answer says, "Sir, I have no one to put me in the pool when the water is stirred up. And while I'm coming to get into it myself, someone else steps down ahead of me." Now that tells us a lot about this guy and what's going on in his mind. Because Jesus didn't ask him, "Can you get healed? Is it possible for you to be healed? Could you be healed?" Jesus said, "Do you want to be healed?" And so his answer tells us a lot of things. What this man is thinking, what he believes, is what I want doesn't really matter because I can't be healed. It can't be done. It's not possible for me to be healed. Because I have no friends here who can help me get into the water. There's no family here to help take care of me and get me into the water. Nobody here at Bethesda is going to take care of me. They're just looking out for themselves. No matter how hard I try, I can't get into the water first. They're faster than me. They have help that I don't do. They're closer to the water. They can do things that I can't do. So this is really not going to work. I can't be healed. You see, this man's answer reveals that he believes that he's trapped. He thinks he's stuck there. And so instead of responding with this straightforward, "Yes, I want to be healed," he just offers excuses. He gives excuses of why this isn't going to work for him. Oh, it's working for other people. There are people who are getting healed, but it's not working for me. It's not possible for me. He begins to justify why after 38 years he is still in the same condition. Why after all of these years at being in a place where he should be getting healing, he isn't. And he just begins to justify why he's in that condition, and he starts by blaming other people. "No one's here. I don't have any friends. I don't have any family. I don't have any support. All of these people are getting in ahead of me. You would think that there would be some type of organizational system that would allow us a first come, first serve. Nobody's thinking that it's my turn. I've been here a really long time." So they're all getting ahead. They're cutting line. They're getting in before me. And he begins to deny any responsibility whatsoever because it's their fault. It's their fault because they're not here to help me. It's their fault because they're not letting me get in. It's their fault because they're beating me. And so he believes he is trapped. And it seems as though he's just resigned himself to the situation. I don't really know exactly because the Bible doesn't give us a lot of details, but I can really speculate on what must be going on in his mind. I think that maybe, possibly, he's lost hope because he's telling himself, someone's always beating me. No one will ever help me. What's the point in trying? What is the use? This is just my life. It is what it is. I'm stuck this way. Maybe he had gotten really comfortable at Bethesda. Been there a really long time. The Bible doesn't say how long, but even if he had only been there for 10 of the 38 years, that's a long time. And so he'd gotten familiar with that place, and he knew how things worked there, and he understood the system there. This is where his space was. It's all he knew. He'd been there so long, he didn't know what was going on the other side of the wall of Bethesda. All he knew was what was taking place right there. Maybe, I don't know, but maybe he found his identity in Bethesda. I'm the guy that's been here the longest. I know all the ropes. I know how this works. I can tell you all the stories of who's come and gone. I can recount to you all the miracles that's happened as people got into the water. I mean, it hasn't been for me. It can't be for me. But I can tell you how it's been happening. There's a hierarchy here. And I'm the head of the hierarchy because I've been here so long. And he's drawing his identity from that. I'm not really sure all the things that were going on in his mind, but this is one thing I do know. His problem is that he is consumed with his situation. He's consumed by his circumstances. He is consumed and fixated on what other people are doing and what they are not doing. He is fixated on what he didn't have and what wasn't being done for him. He was so consumed with those thoughts that he had lost sight of his real issue. And his real issue is he just needed to be healed. Something brought him to Bethesda in the first place. That was the issue. That's what he needed to change in his life. That's what needed to be fixed in his life. And so he doesn't even address that. Jesus said, do you want to be healed? And he said, well, I just can't be healed. All these people and all these things, and I'm stuck here and I'm trapped here. And all he's doing is looking at the circumstances instead of looking at the root of his issue. And so Jesus responds to him in true Jesus fashion, and he cuts right to the chase. He doesn't sympathize with this man. He doesn't get down there and commiserate with him and put his arm around him and bless your heart. And I know this has been hard, and this isn't really how your life should have been. And I know you had different plans and better plans. And these people, they should have done a better job. And I'm going to get after them and let them know they should be changing what they're doing. These people, bless your little heart. Jesus didn't even pray for this man. Didn't even say, be healed. Jesus cut straight to the chase and he said, get up. Get up. Pick up your pallet and walk. Now, I know that when Jesus said it, it was not accusatory or judgmental. It wasn't condemning. It wasn't harsh. It wasn't shameful. It wasn't mean. It was full of love, but it was firm. It was full of authority. It was full of his power and his anointing. So what he was saying to this man is, action is required on your part. He was going to have to do something different. Instead of laying by the pool, looking at the water, waiting for an angel, wishing things were different, hoping that somebody would move him, hoping that someone would do something for him, Jesus said, you stand up. You pick up. You walk. And I can just imagine what must be going through this man's mind. As he immediately obeyed. See, he could have said, well, listen, you know I'm a little shaky. I hadn't walked in 38 years, so give me a second, okay? He could have said, you know, my legs are real noodly. Got atrophy. I got to work this out for a second. Hold on. He immediately got up, and as he did, I can just imagine the surge that went through his body. I can just imagine that as he bent over to pick up his pallet, the supernatural just began to infiltrate every muscle and tendon and sinew in his body. That his bones got strength. And as he began to walk, I can just imagine all of that unfolding in him with ever increasing intensity. That he went from frail and weak to strong and hearty, not in an instant, but as he obeyed, as he moved, as he walked. And so he gets up. He does what Jesus said. He picks up his pallet and he starts to walk. And as he begins to walk, he encounters some people. They're religious people. And they promptly tell him that carrying his mat on the Sabbath is not permissible. Now, if you're not familiar with Jewish history, the Sabbath was the holy day. It was the day of worship, and there was no work permitted on the Sabbath. That's part of the Ten Commandments. But this group of people had taken it to the next level, and they had deemed almost anything but breathing was work. And so you certainly could not carry your mat on the Sabbath. And they immediately stop him and begin to accuse him of doing something that he should not be doing. And I love his response. He says to the religious people, well, the man who healed me and gave me back my strength was the one who said to me, pick up your pallet and walk. See, already he's had a perspective shift. He is not being influenced by their judgments or their criticisms or their ridicule or their accusations. What he knows is, I am doing something that I could not do before, that I have not done in 38 years. You can't tell me I'm not going to walk. You can't tell me that I'm going to move forward. So I've been stuck for 38 years, stuck at Bethesda, and I'm walking. And he's unmoved by their comments. And so he obviously continues to walk, because later on in the day he shows up at the temple where Jesus sees him again. And Jesus comes up to him and he said, see, you're well. So stop sinning or something worse is going to happen to you. I find it interesting that he gives the exact same direction that he gave to the woman who had been caught in adultery in John chapter 8. Where he said, go and sin no more. In essence, what he's saying here is stop doing what you were doing when I found you. Stop doing what you were doing when I found you. Change. Because if you want things in your life to change, if you don't want to wind up here again, if you don't want to wind up at Bethesda again, you're going to have to change some things in your life. I love this story because I feel like it is so relevant to us. You and I, we are this man. We are the lame man. We are lying by the pool of Bethesda. And I don't care how long you've been saved. I don't care how long you've been walking with Jesus and how many teeth you might have. We all have a Bethesda in our life. We all have a place in our life where we are disabled, where we are dysfunctional, where we are sick. We all have a condition, and maybe it's woundedness or brokenness or disappointment or fear, rejection, regret, guilt, shame. We're living under condemnation. Something was done to us. Something happened to us. Some things were said about us. Things were said to us. And that particular area of our life, we are disabled. And we are trapped at Bethesda, lying there, hoping somebody will do something. Hoping somebody is going to fix this. Expecting somebody else to fix this. And we do exactly what this man did. Because Jesus approaches us time after time after time. And he asks us the question. I know that you hear it at least once a week when you come here on Sunday. But hopefully, in the secret place, you're there, and he's asking you there, or he may be whispering to you as you're driving your car, you're doing the dishes, you're at your job, or whatever it is that you're doing, and he's whispering to you, do you want to be healed? Do you want to be healed? Do you want your marriage restored? Do you want a functional family instead of a dysfunctional family? Do you want better finances? Do you want peace? Do you need help? Do you want all the things that I've died to give you? Do you want your rightful inheritance as a son or a daughter of God? Do you want restoration? Do you want to be whole? Do you want to be healed? He's asking all of us the question. And sadly, we respond just like the lame man does, because we complain. We complain about where we are. We complain about our circumstances. We complain about being in that place of Bethesda. And we criticize and we point fingers. I'm only here because they did that. I got here because they treated me this way. I'm in this place because of what they did to me. I can't get out because they won't change. They won't do anything different. I'm stuck here until they decide. And we blame our parents. Bless our parents' hearts. We blame them for everything in our lives. And I know that there are some parents who didn't make some really good choices, and I understand that. But at some point, we have to stop pointing the finger at them and take responsibility for our own actions. We're blaming our parents. We blame our spouse. We blame our ex. We blame our kids, our coworkers, our boss, the government. We're blaming everybody. Nobody helps me. Nobody cares. Nobody is supporting me. No one cares about my situation. Nobody cares about what I'm going through. Nobody cares about how I feel. When's it going to be my turn? Everybody else is getting healing. Everybody else has got freedom. Everybody else is getting all this good stuff. When's it my turn? What about me? We go around and saying, you know, life's not fair. There's only two groups of people. There are the haves and the have-nots. And I'm a have-not. I got the short end of the stick. I got dealt a bad hand. I married the worst man in the world. I have the worst boss there is. My kids are terrible. My coworkers are idiots. I got no breaks. I didn't inherit any money. My parents weren't wealthy. I didn't get a scholarship. And we rehearse, because y'all know. And we rehearse our sob story over and over and over again. We wallow in self-pity. It's just on replay. It's just on replay in our head. Replay. And if anybody knocks on the door, we're going to give you a chair and let you hear about it too. And we make excuses of why we are still where we are. And some of us have been living at Bethesda so long, we don't even know how we got here. And it's become a comfort zone. It's all we know. I've been saying this stuff so long, it's all I know. If I'm not running the boss down and griping about my schedule and how stupid this job is, my coworkers and I don't have anything to talk about. If I can't talk bad about my spouse, what am I going to say even? I don't even know. What is conversation outside of complaining and griping and negativity? I've been here so long, I'm so comfortable with it. It just comes right out without me even thinking about it. And it becomes our identity. We're wearing that thing like a mink coat. Look at me. Have you heard about how terrible my life is? Look at the lining. You know what I'm saying? We are so fixated on our circumstances that we have lost sight of the real issue. And the issue is our condition. Guys, it really doesn't matter how you got to Bethesda. What matters is that you're there. And if you want to keep pointing a fingers, if I hadn't been abused or molested or treated improperly, or my parents hadn't rejected me, or my dad abandoned me, and all of those kind of things, you know, you can only say that for so long, because the reality is we arrived on the planet with broken parts and missing pieces. And if it hadn't been your parents, it would have been somebody else. They didn't really break you, they just exploited what was already not working. So it's really not about what anybody said or did. It's about the fact that you're broken. See, it didn't matter if the man was paralyzed or limp or just plain lazy. The point was that he was at Bethesda because he needed healing. And healing is the only way to get out of Bethesda. And Jesus, true to form, he really doesn't care about our excuses. Oh, he loves us, and he cares about us, but he doesn't really care about our list of excuses, because he knows that those are all roadblocks that keep us and prevent us from experiencing the full healing, restoration, and freedom that he wants to give us. And so he cuts right to the chase. And he says to us lovingly, mercifully, but firmly, get up. Pick up your mat and walk. What he's saying is, if you want things in your life to change, you're going to have to change some things in your life. See, we love this encounter of the lame man and Jesus because it's a time for us to cheer for Jesus, to see his authority, to see his power, to see supernatural things working. And so, you know, he says, get up and pick up your mat and walk. And boom, the man does, and he begins to move. And we're like, yay, Jesus! Completely glossing over the fact that the man had to get up. That Jesus didn't say, take my hand and let's go. That Jesus didn't get down there beside him and stick his arms underneath his arms and pull him up. Jesus stood there towering over him and said, get up. Get up. You pick up your mat. You walk. And I feel like this is exactly what Jesus is saying to us. Remember, guys, we're cutting teeth, and I love you, but this is what Jesus is saying to us. Stop doing what you're doing. You see, change is ushered in by change. You don't get brand new, and then you start doing out of the brand new. No, you change, and your change brings brand new. Because change only comes when you modify, adjust, alter, and shift your position. You cannot keep doing what you're currently doing and get different results. I believe they call that the definition of insanity. So if you are ever going to leave your Bethesda, you must change what you are doing. That's the get up part. And then he's saying to us, pick it up. Pick it up. Put away the tools of your disability. Get rid of it. You know, metaphorically speaking, we've got wheelchairs and crutches and walkers, canes. And we'll say, well, I'm going to try this. I'm going to try to step out of where I am and do something different, but I'm going to hang on to this crutch because if this don't work, I'm going to need it. And Jesus is saying, uh-uh, put away the tools of your disability. And what he is saying here is, do not leave a place for you to come back to. You see, when he told this man to get up and walk, take up your pallet, what he is saying is, listen, it's fixing to get tough for you. Because you've been here so long, you don't have a house. You don't have a job. You don't have a way to get food. And so when you leave this place right now and you come outside of Bethesda into the real world, it's going to be tough. And you're going to be wondering, how can I eat? Where can I sleep? I don't have a safety and security of a family or people around me. And I don't have a roof over my head and I don't know what to do. You know what I'll do? I can always go back to Bethesda. My pallet's there. Because it's what I know. And it may not be much, but I know the people and I know how things work there. And somebody will throw me scraps, so at least I won't starve to death. And Jesus is telling that man, just like he's telling us, no, no, you pick it up. And don't leave yourself any space to come back to. Jesus is saying to us, clean up your mess. You've been here at Bethesda so long, you made some messes, and you clean it up. Don't expect your spouse or your kids or your friends or your family, your coworkers to clean this mess up. Don't get up and act like this hadn't been a thing. You've been in a bad place for a while and you've made some messes. You need to clean them up. Clean up your mess. And then he said, walk. Put distance between you and Bethesda. You can't live here anymore because you're not like these people anymore. You're healed, you're whole, you're well, you've been set free, and this is a place for broken and sick people, and you're not broken and sick. So you can't stay here anymore because you can't maintain the same mentality that you've had. You can't keep doing it the way it's done at Bethesda. And so you need to cut some ties and put distance between you and the people. You need to cut ties between you and mentalities and attitudes and perspectives that will keep you chained to Bethesda. Walk away from there. And as you move, as you obey, you'll find that healing and restoration and strength will begin to flow into you. That when you step out, he's going to step in. And it's going to require some tough choices. There's going to be some hard places for you. Well, what am I supposed to do now? And how am I supposed to think? And where am I supposed to get this? And it's nobody's here coddling me or affirming me. Well, what am I supposed to do now? I don't know how to do it any differently. It's going to be hard for you. But as you are doing it, he's not leaving you on your own. You see, a lot of us think, see, we've got this whole thing backwards, really. Because we think, well, when I see Jesus heal my marriage, then I will respect my husband. When I see you change her, Jesus, I will love her like you love the church. I'm waiting on you. When are you going to do something, Jesus? When you pay off all of my debt and clear up all of this mess, then I'll tithe, Jesus. Then I'll give to the expansion fund. Then I will be generous with other people. But I'm going to need you to do this first. When you do this, then I'll do that. When healing is manifested in my body, in my relationships, when I don't have anxiety anymore, then I'll do things differently. But until then, I can't. I can't. I can't love my spouse like that. I can't give like that. I can't be at peace. You're going to have to change some things first, Jesus. And Jesus is saying, no, you get up. You pick up. You walk. And when you do, I'm right there with you. I'm going to meet you. See, it's like he invites and we say yes And he says, okay, here's the next step. Here's the next thing. When you step out in obedience, doing what you did not think that you could do, doing what you never thought was possible, and you're thinking, I don't have the strength for this. I don't have the power for this. I don't have the ability to do this. He's like, nope, yes you do, because here I am. And then he tells you the next thing to do. I don't know. I haven't picked up my stuff before. I don't know what it's like. I've been just laying here in this stuff all this time, and I don't know how to pick it up. But if you, when you start to do it, he's empowering. See, you have to do what he's asking you to do first, and then he meets you right there and gives you more than you need to accomplish what he's called you to do. So don't think that you're having to do this whole thing by yourself, because you're not. He's not calling you to set you free. He's calling you to step into what he's already done. You know, last week during worship, we talked about the fact that Jesus said on the cross, it is finished. It is everything. It's healing, it's freedom, it's wholeness, it's deliverance. So, I mean, there's not one thing that he's wrapping up the details on right now. It's all completed. And so he says, step into what's already done. Now, I know you don't have the power to live that way. You don't have the supernatural strength to do that, but that's where my grace kicks in. But you got to step out first. And you need to let this encounter with Jesus grip you so deeply that can't nobody tell you different. Because here's the thing. When you start walking away from Bethesda, there'll be some people who don't like it. They won't like it because they're still at Bethesda. Who do you think you are? Sister Holy so-and-so? What you mean? What you mean you're going to be different? You can't be different. You don't know how to be different. We're just alike. We're the same person. I know you. I know how you act. I know how you think. What do you think you're doing? There will be people who maybe don't even know all of that, but they'll just look at you and begin to make judgments about, you're being really irrational here. Don't you think this is over the top? This seems very dramatic to me. I think you misunderstood truth. You know, Jesus never really talked about that. You know, if you read the New Testament, you read the new letters, the red letters. That's really not in there. Jesus really didn't talk about that. Let me just say this real quick. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and the Word was with God, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. Therefore, the Word is Jesus, and Jesus is the Word. And so if it's in the Bible, it's Jesus. Whether the words are read or not. So if it is in the Old Testament or the New Testament, it's Jesus, and he's talking about it. So I think you've misunderstood truth. You know, I don't think God really expects all that from us. Well, let me assure you, he does. He does. Because you can't have your cake and eat it too. You can't keep things the way they are and still find change. And so Jesus is standing here this morning and he is saying, do you want to be healed? Do you want freedom and wholeness, deliverance? Do you want a better marriage? Do you want a peaceful home? Do you want to find contentment and satisfaction and joy? How's your finances? Do you want those to be different? Do you want your health to be different? Do you want your weight to be different? And yes, Jesus cares about your weight because the body you're living in was a gift to you from him. So he kind of does care about how you take care of it. What needs to be different? Relationships? Your attitude, your perspective, your mindset, the words that are coming out of your mouth. What do you need? want to be healed. So he's inviting us this morning to get up. Get up. If that's what you want, get up. Pick up your mat and walk.